The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much for hanging out with me on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday night, Saturday morning, or at your leisure, wherever you're listening to the program. We appreciate you very, very much. I'm excited about this weekend, Friday night at the Bloomington Speedway. It's the Sheldon Kinzer Memorial. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be cool. It's going to be fun. We're expecting 6,000 people at the racetrack on Friday night. Don't let that deter you from coming. It's going to be a USAC race. It's going to be great. Hopefully, we'll have everyone out of there by 10 or 10:30 at night. And then the Taste of Bloomington on Saturday. So looking forward to that as well. And then Sunday afternoon, I'm going to have some of my family over for a summer cookout. My son went to the Odin Locker today, meat locker, to get the meat for the new Traeger grill that I've not yet used, but gave it a little temporary burn through last night, even though it was 150 degrees outside. I waited until around 8 o'clock, went outside to fire it up and just to make sure it worked fine and everything was good. And it was, so it's going to be a fun, fun weekend. So we've got a good show today. Of course, I promised, and I now am going to hopefully deliver on navigating the new tax law, what the one big, beautiful tax bill could mean to you in your retirement and estate planning. I'm going to take a little deeper dive into it all. So if that's of interest to you, hang around. If it's not of interest to you, turn it to something else, I guess. So anyway, let's do a little news of the week. Jimmy picked up a few articles for me that I thought was somewhat interesting. Of course, brought to you by the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online, KennyBlandAuctions.com. We've mentioned this before, but Yahoo Finance, millionaires multiply across the U.S., but most find it's not all mansions and champagne. I remember in looking back to the early 90s when I first started in practice, you know, no one had $1 million. I mean, if they did, that I never saw them. And, you know, $200,000-$300,000, and you were good. But now, I mean, it seems like everybody's got $1 million. And it's not what it used to be, right? Especially when you think about 30 years ago when there was only 1.6 million Americans with a net worth of $1 million or more. That would include your house. We're now at 23.8 million people in the U.S. have a $1 million net worth. Inflation, stock market booming, whatever. There's a lot of reasons that we're there, but mainly because we became a group of people that understood that we no longer have pensions, we can't live on Social Security alone, and that the people getting jobs decided, you know what, I need to put my 10% away, my 15% away. I'll get the company match. And lo and behold, one day you wake up and you've got a big pile of money. Now the question is, like, how do you get it out? And that's where we move to the next article, again from Yahoo. With 11,000 baby boomers retiring every single day in America, 401k withdrawals and IRA withdrawals are ramping up. So the question is this big wealth transfer we've talked about really ever going to happen? Well, maybe or maybe not. But it is interesting because the article talks about something that I mentioned probably 20 years ago, following demographics and predictable patterns, that when we would start seeing this big wave of retirees is now. So it's nothing that we were surprised about. But the idea back then, the fear was, you're going to have all these people starting to withdraw money, moving into more conservative investments, and that's going to tank the stock market. That was the logic. And if you kind of drank the Kool-Aid back in the 90s, you would have said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What they didn't account for was the millennials, this big, massive group of people who are saving their rear ends off because, you know what, they look at their parents and say, they didn't save enough. I don't want to be like mom and dad. I want to save more money. So all the people buying every single week, when they put money into the 401k's payroll deduction, buy, 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 I do not think that you'll have enough selling on the other side to counteract the buying from the millennials and the Gen Xers as well. So if you think about it logically, and hopefully you've listened to this program long enough, even if you're 65, you have to plan for a 30-year retirement. Are you going to sell everything and move it into bonds, fixed income, insurance products? No. You're going to move what you need to move into a category of investments that will give you some stability and reliability in retirement, but you're still going to need growth to hedge inflation, protect your purchasing power, legacy planning, all that and more. So that is not a concern of mine whatsoever, but I do find it interesting that this story has resurrected itself 20 years later. And finally, will the one big beautiful bill spark car and truck buying? Well, I think so. Why? Because of the bonus depreciation. Whenever it was 100%, where you basically could buy something as a business owner and deduct it all in 1 year, and even if you financed it, it worked out pretty well. Yes, the answer is yes. It will spark a big car and truck buying. Now, when you deduct something, it has to be over a certain poundage and all that kind of stuff, but I remember back when we had the bonus depreciation 100%, then it went to 75%, 50%, then 25%. People were buying a lot of stuff. My friends in construction were buying trucks, buying equipment. I bought some things that year to get bonus depreciation. So let's say you bought something. Trucks are expensive, by the way. I went to see my good friend at Bland's this week, not Kenny Bland Auctions, but I think they're cousins, the other Bland Auto, and swapped out trucks. And it was great, but I bought a used one. I bought a 2019, and I paid around $35,000 for it. It's nice. It's a Silverado, four-wheel drive, big king cab. It's going to pull my boat just fine. I'm not going to be my other truck was kind of it was very plain Jane, but it was for trash and, you know, basic stuff, but two-wheel drive. So anyway, I finally did that. And one of the things I considered was buying a new truck because you have to buy something new to get this bonus depreciation. And I thought, okay, I may go over to see my friend Carrie Curry and get a brand new one. So I had my son do all my research beforehand, and we said, okay, yeah, you can go spend $65,000 or $70,000, 0% financing. I could have written it all off or whatever. Is that a better deal than me paying $35,000 for a truck I rarely drive? So I went the other route. I bought one for $35,000 instead. And by the way, my old truck evidently was worth about $19,000, so it didn't cost me a ton of money to swap out for a much bigger, more beautiful truck than what I had before. So yes, that's the whole idea. Give people incentives and things will happen. And that's what we're anticipating will happen and hopefully will happen. And if we get interest rates come down a little bit, it'll make people that need to finance things even better, because that's the cool thing. You go out and buy a $70,000 truck and finance the entire thing or make payments on it. You could literally deduct the entire thing year one without actually ever putting any money down. So if you are in a 37% tax bracket plus your state and local, call that 42%, you know, you go out and buy something for $100,000. It's easier math for old Dave. I could take a write-off of $42,000, right? Or $42,000 would be a write-off, and that hits the bottom line pretty quickly. So yes, the answer is yes, yes, yes. It will spark, and probably already has sparked, a big time buying. Now you do have some phase outs and things like that, but I'm going to dig into this a little bit deeper for y'all, and I'm going to talk about navigating the new tax law. I'm preparing a course, a seminar, whatever you want to call it. We're going to do it just for our own clients, I think, at the end of August. But it is navigating the new tax law, what the one big beautiful tax bill could mean for your retirement and estate plan. So when we come back, I'll start the deep dive into it. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Sure Money with David Hayes. Hope you're having a wonderful evening or a morning or whenever you're listening to the program. It's going to be a great weekend. I mean, it's going to be a great, great weekend. Weather's going to be nice. Lots of things to do. Very excited about it. Then I'm actually heading off to, believe it or not, Uruguay next week. A group of my Ed Slotty lead advisors put together a hunting trip. So we're going to do ducks and doves in Uruguay. The cool thing is one of my buddies named Pablo, he is from Uruguay. His parents still live there, and we are going in a day early to spend time with his family, learn the culture. I'm excited about it. And then we'll be there until my wife's birthday, the 12th. So I'm going to be gone midweek over the weekend and be back on the 12th. So looking forward to that. I'll tell you more. And I'm going to require, so I'll be here for the show next week, believe it or not. Between now and then, I'll be in Uruguay. Thank God I have a wonderful staff of people that takes care of things when I'm gone. In fact, I think it's better when I'm gone, less chaotic. Everybody's like really focused in on their jobs and they're doing a great job. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, we're going to first start off with this new One Big Beautiful Bill and what it could mean for your retirement and estate planning. But first, we have to talk about some of the things in the bill that are permanent, and I use big quotation remarks around that, and what's temporary. And then later on, we'll talk about what is the potential price. So, focusing on taxes today, big surprise, right? Benjamin Franklin famously said, "Nothing is certain except for death and taxes." I would argue, Ben, that only half of that equation is truly predictable. The taxes are inevitable, but how and how much you'll be taxed, that's where the uncertainty lies. Tax policy shifts with every administration, every congressional session, creating constant evolving landscape that demands our attention, and that's why I have a job. I love it. People are like, man, this stuff's confusing. I'm like, yeah, it's great. I have a job because it's confusing. If it's super simple, anyone could do it. So the recent passage of the Big Beautiful Bill demonstrated, honestly, how quickly the tax landscape can change and be transformed. Now, the Act preserves many of the existing benefits that we already know about, but also substantially does other things for both individuals and businesses. The catch, most individual benefits are temporary, applying only from tax years 2025, where we are now, which means it's kind of retroactive-ish, through the end of Trump's presidency at the end of 2028. So they go away at the end of 2028, 2029. We're back to the way it used to be. So it kind of creates this planning puzzle, which I, again, love. But the question then will become, and the guess and the gamble, will future congressional action extend these provisions beyond Trump's current term? We don't really know. These tax cuts obviously come with some consequences. They might add to our national debt. I say might, because I think it will. Our national debt's going to go up anyway, right? When you're seeing it, $36, $37 trillion in debt, and most of our money that's coming in is paying for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. We're spending more on interest than we are defense, more on interest than Medicare. Our debt's going to continue to go up. Now, I think this could make the narrative that I've been running with for so long even better, that taxes will need to go up in the future to pay for all of this, right? Now, creativity may prevail. We may have other ways to come up with the money. I don't know. But I'm going to continue to focus on what we can control, which is the taxes on our retirement accounts. So both permanent changes, and remember, nothing in tax policy really is permanent, and temporary provisions, along with the cost, that's what we're going to explore today. And, you know, not just today, but then how this tax shift could emerge during your 20 or 30 year retirement. Like, what could occur? So the goal, obviously, isn't just to understand today's tax landscape, but is to build a framework that can adapt to whatever comes next. So let's talk about it. All right, here we go. So first thing is what the bill did. It said we're going to keep tax rates the same. We're still going to have the 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, 37. We're going to have the tax brackets be about the same. They'll continue to escalate with inflation. And it had the bill not passed, according to, who was it? Who put this together? Probably people that don't know math very well, but we'll go ahead and give them the credit. 62% would face higher taxes. 7.5% overall tax increase had the bill not passed, and it simply would have sunset. So another permanent change, and that's a permanent change, is the standard deduction. As effective this year, the standard deduction is permanently increased for both individuals and married couples. So married couples are now $31,500. And that, again, will be adjusted every year for inflation. Now, the business pass-through income deduction, that's also a permanent. Now, what is that? So if I'm, you know, a business owner, and part of this was part of the 2017 tax cuts as well, that becomes permanent, benefiting small business owners. So the deduction is up to 20% of eligible revenue. That applies to sole proprietors, partnerships, S-corps, LLCs. For certain small businesses like mine, those they're considered a specified service or trade business. That's like law, healthcare, consulting, accounting, financial guys like me. We do not get that 20% deduction. But for most people, plumbers and electricians and some consultants, they do get it. So there are income limitations on that. If you over a certain amount, you don't get it. Now, if you dig into some of the other permanent things, we're going to talk about estate taxes. Now, again, another permanent change drastically increases the estate tax exemption. The 2017 tax reform basically said, hey, we're going to go from 5 to 10 million. But right now, it's almost $14 million per individual. Double that up for married couples. And now it's going to be $30 million for married couples going forward, automatically inflation adjusted, 15 if you're single. So that's big. Now, the other thing to keep in mind when it comes to other permanent provisions is charitable deductions. That's going to be even for non-itemizers. You get a small. So if you don't itemize your deductions, you take the standard and you give away, you know, $2,000 as a married couple. You can deduct that too. There you go. Alternative minimum tax. I won't spend much time on that. But here's one that is interesting because here's the temporary ones. The senior bonus deduction. No tax on Social Security. Well, that didn't happen, right? Of course, during his campaign, he promised to eliminate taxes on Social Security benefits entirely. But as often happens when campaign promises meet legislative reality, the final law took a little different approach. Rather than completely removing taxes on Social Security, the new legislation creates what is called now the, quote, senior bonus deduction. Think of it as a tax break designed to help reduce but not eliminate the taxes you might owe on your Social Security. Why didn't Congress simply eliminate Social Security taxes altogether as originally promised? Well, there's a lot of things that have to go into that. There were three main factors. I'm not going to dig too deep into it. Just it didn't happen. But it's available for anyone 65 and older. So even if you're not on Social Security, which many people 65 are not, they're going to wait till 67, maybe even 70. You still get it. You get that extra $6,000 bonus per person, $12,000 if you're married. And that's on top of the already deduction that we got for being a little bit older, right? So you got the extra $1,350, I think it was, or I think it was $1,950 if you're single, $3,100 if you were married filing joint. So that is now in 2025, $2,000 and $3,200, plus you get your other $6,000 or $12,000 on top of that. That's big. That's really big. So that's the bonus deduction there. I'm going a little bit long, but when I come back, I'm going to talk about how you can take that bonus deduction if you're 65 or older, do a Roth conversion, and how much you could actually do with all this now found new money. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. If you hear me flipping through pages, it's because of my presentation that I put together that I'll be doing at the end of August on this whole tax bill and what it means for you from a retirement and estate planning perspective. So I'm going to go back to the big bonus, right? Senior bonus. Takes effect 2025. It's only around until 2028. Even if you aren't on Social Security, it's a great planning opportunity. Let's say you're in the 12% bracket. Oh, which by the way, if you're married filing jointly, that's all the way up to 132, almost 133,000 of income. That's big. You could use the $12,000 tax deduction plus the other tax deduction and convert somewhere around 50, what did I do the calculation here, $62,000 tax-free by just using these new deductions. That's your standard deduction plus the extra $12,500 or $13,000 plus the other $3,000. So it's a big deduction. I mean, it's a big deduction, and you can do some massive conversions that way. There's some income limitations on it, but for the most part, most people will be fine. The other thing that was also temporary was the salt. And this isn't, again, what's going to boost my blood pressure. I already consumed too much sodium. But anyway, it's the state and local income tax stuff. That now is up to $40,000. It used to be $10,000. Again, that expires, but not until 2030. And no tax on tips, extra deduction, that expires in 2028. The Trump account, kids savings account, $1,000, born this year and for the next few years, that goes through 2029. So it's interesting when you talk to legislators, which I have, and I actually have a meeting with Todd Young set up, I think 26th or 27th of August, I believe. Yeah, I do. And, you know, he's on recess, and his office called and asked to come by. And I'm like, this is interesting. I haven't seen Todd for a while. But I did talk to Erin Houshin quite a bit. She's on the Reconciliation Committee. It's like, how do you reconcile this stuff? You can't. I mean, that's why some of this stuff has to end in 2028, because it's too dang expensive to go forward. Again, people, I don't know how they do the math here. It's all fuzzy to me, but it's math. And I'm not going to worry about all that right now. I'm just going to say to you guys, listen, there's some opportunities here for you to move money from taxable to tax-free using these larger deductions and bonus deductions and all this other stuff. Bonus depreciation. If I take a big tax deduction for something I bought and that lowers my tax rates way down, boom, take care of it with a Roth conversion. What if I have a net loss on my business? Do a Roth. Never let a good loss go to waste. I don't care what it is, whether it's a cash loss or a non-cash loss, which like depreciation, take advantage of it for sure. Now, I've covered pretty much everything that is permanent and everything that is also temporary. So what I haven't covered is the price tag. So the Tax Foundation estimates that the cost of the tax cuts are around $3.8 trillion over 10 years. Now, compound that with the ever-growing refinancing of our current debt, higher interest costs, cost of health care going up. Remember, again, 11,000 people a day turning Medicare age every single day. Go to usdebtclock.org. There's a lot here. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about maybe the cost of this new beautiful tax bill. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Yeah, no tax on auto loan interest, a new auto loan, right? A new car, not a used car, a new car. It kind of goes back to my opening remarks that will this bill spark a lot of new car buying and truck buying? Well, you have two things to lean into. One would be the no tax on auto loan interest, a new auto loan interest deduction from, again, 2025 through 2028. Applies exclusively to new vehicles assembled in the United States, at least final assembly in the United States. That's going to be a tough one to follow. I don't understand it all, but the deduction is capped at $10,000 a year, phases out at a 20% rate for single earners above $100,000 and married couples over $200,000. The benefit is available regardless of whether you itemize or take the standard deduction. So, boom, there you are. But what about if you have zero interest rate on a new car? Because I was over there looking at this, a lot of promotions, 1% interest, 0% interest. So perhaps it won't cost as much at all, you know, to have this new deduction. All right, so the question is, what's this all going to cost? I don't have any idea. But the Tax Foundation, the taxfoundation.org, they say it's going to cost a lot, another $3.8 trillion over 10 years. Remember when we were in 2020 and 2021, the stimulus packages, $1 trillion, $3 trillion, all in 1 year? This is over 10 years. So I don't think it'll be inflationary from that perspective of borrowing more and pumping more money in, all that kind of stuff. But it's something we need to keep our eye on, because if our debt continues to grow and it's predicted to be somewhere around $50 trillion in the year 2030, that's what I've been reading, that it's a lot of money, $80 trillion, right, by the time in 15 years, by the time these people that are now turning 60-ish, were born in 1960s or 65-ish, get to 75 when they have to start taking out required minimum distributions. There's going to be a lot of money in tax-deferred retirement accounts that the IRS and the U.S. government is licking their chops to get. So I don't know for sure, but if you haven't done this, please do it. It's kind of alarming, but go to the usdebtclock.org. It's something else. It's very, very interesting to watch, and you can click different tabs on it, but the bottom line is, when I clicked this a couple days ago, actually it was on June 15th when I did this, it's been a while, U.S. national debt was $37 trillion. That was on June 15th. I'm assuming it's a lot more than that now. They get into unfunded liabilities and all kinds of interesting stuff. So debt clock, usdebtclock.org. If you've not been there, go check it out. And then divide that, by the way, by every tax-paying household in America. Remember, we have about 365 million people-ish in America. Half of them pay taxes, right? And then you put the households in place. You're kind of like, oh my gosh, I owe a lot of money. Because remember, this is our debt. It's not the, quote, government debt, because we are the government. We are the people that create the government. So don't be fooled by that. So I wanted to say this. What can you do about it? I don't have any idea. But here's what I know is that David Walker, back in 2007, said what they're now saying now. The Tax Foundation, the Bureau of Fiscal Service, is saying at $36 trillion and rising, the national debt threatens America's economic future. The current fiscal path is unsustainable. Well, back in 2007, David Walker, former Comptroller of the United States of America, like a CPA of America, said the exact same thing. And here we are all these years later, and we're still sustaining. And I don't know exactly how, what, will, or whatever, but we are. But I'm thinking, if you think about your income, your investments, your health care, you've got to think about your tax strategies, your legacy planning. I was telling someone today who is still contemplating whether to do a conversion or not. I'm like, listen, I don't know how else we're going to raise the revenue. National sales tax, perhaps. Is it going to be a means tax on social? I don't know. Is it going to be a other forms of tax? I don't have any idea. I just know that we need to have spending under control, which I think we're trying to some degree. Maybe, maybe not. Actually, if you look at the bill, probably not. But you have to have revenue at some point. And hopefully we get back to the point where when we're doing great, we don't overspend. And when things are bad, we overspend to stimulate. That's the way it used to always be. And sometime in the 90s-ish is when we got away from that. And now, no matter what we do, good times or bad times, we spend. We overspend. So keep that in mind. When we come back, I'm going to give you a Will Rogers quote. You're going to love it. When I come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I was looking through my presentation that I'm going to do here at the end of the month on this big, beautiful bill and what it means to you for your retirement and estate planning. So I get into the unknown. How are we going to pay for all this? I get into reducing future spending, increased borrowing, increased revenue with economic growth, increased revenue with higher taxes. We all know we have to start paying for this at some point, right? I think we all know that. And there's only a few options, and maybe it's going to be a combination of all of this. So don't think that I'm like a naysayer or whatever. I'm just a realist. I'm like, okay, I get it. We've got an issue here, but the potential for future tax increases should be a huge concern for any of us planning for retirement, because we're going to depend heavily on withdrawals from our IRAs and 401ks and other tax-deferred retirement accounts to fund our living expenses. That creates the concern. Every dollar you withdraw from these traditional accounts get taxed at ordinary income tax rates, not capital gains rates. And whatever current tax rates happen to be at the time, that's what you're going to pay. So continue to focus on the fact that we have been given a gift, that we have extended these incredibly low tax rates for a, quote, permanent time. Now, and it will be more difficult to change, because you're going to have a complete flip. You're going to have the House of Representatives flip. You're going to have the Senate flip. You're going to have the executive branch flip. And that doesn't happen very often, where you get all three together, which is what happened in this case when they actually pushed this bill through. But it gives us a much longer runway. If I'm 65 and I don't have to take required distributions until I'm 75, do I have 10 years? You probably do have 10 years to slowly move your money methodically from taxable to tax-free, get that taxable retirement account down so that you don't have crazy required minimum distributions. Not so much at 75, but at 85. When you project those boogers out, you're like, oh my gosh. Even if you need it to spend it, it's still coming out and it's all going to be taxable. So Will Rogers said, I love this quote, the difference between death and taxes is death doesn't get any worse every time Congress meets. I genuinely believe the best days are ahead of us. It's me, you, everybody. I just encourage everyone to envision what that might look like. And when I say that, envision a future of prosperity, greatness, gratefulness, generosity, whatever it might be. But vision that and then position yourself to be able to do that. I've been currently, you know, just kind of reassessing things in my life that give me angst. And it was interesting because we had a fish fry at my office today. Shelly's husband, Dean, brought in some walleye, crappie, and bluegill. It was fun. We did a fish fry in the back parking lot, brought it in our big conference room, and everyone enjoyed that with coleslaw and tartar sauce. And it was really, really good. We had a lot of fun. But when I think about that, I'm like, hey, is that what I really want? It was great. I mean, I loved it. Or do I want to have a worry life? Well, we were talking about this during the lunch, and Josh, they were saying how much David was worrying about a certain person being hired because I didn't think we had enough work at the time to keep her busy. And she was a higher paid employee. And I'm like, I don't remember worrying about that too much. And Josh is like, David doesn't worry about anything. And one of the guys on my 50th birthday, they did a tribute video where everyone sent videos in. It was really cool and I appreciate it. But one of our folks said, what I've learned from David is don't sweat the small stuff. And number two, don't sweat the big stuff. And I do sweat stuff. I just don't show it. I don't let it get to me. I don't let it bother me. But something that's been bugging the crap out of me is property taxes here in Bloomington. Now, I have argued the assessed values of many of my pieces of real estate, and I will say this. I think they've got them right. I think they have the assessed values right. The issue is the taxes are too much. Now, if you have a personal residence, it's not too bad. You take, you know, it's about 1% of your assessed value. But if you have a rental property, it's 2%. If it's a commercial property, it's 3%. And I'm like, where do they come up with this stuff? Well, the other issue is when they pass these referendums, it's not 2%, it's 2.86%. So all of a sudden, if you own a rental property, you're taking 3 months of your rent and flushing it down the toilet in the form of real estate taxes. When I first started investing in real estate many, many years ago, it was pretty simple. You just said, hey, about a month and a half of my rent goes to taxes. And then you had the insurance. And then you had, so I'm like, the first 3 months is just taxes, insurance, and maintenance. That was it. Pretty simple. Then the other 9 months could pay for my debt service or whatever. And at the end of the day, you should have about a 10 to 20% positive cash flow. All right, cool. Well, about 4 years ago, something changed. And all of a sudden, obviously, property values have increased and all that. But it's kind of like, okay, I can't really value a personal residence where I can get a 30-year fixed mortgage, you know, back at the 3 and 4% range, and now 6.5% or whatever. I have to buy, when I do commercial stuff, it's a 5-year fix typically, and then it adjusts. And my amortization is 20 years, not 30 years, so the payments are higher. So it makes it really, really hard to have affordable rental properties. So my only angst right now is the expense of running a rental property. So I have decided, heck with it. I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm going to sell them. Now the question is, will anyone buy them? So I talked to a friend on the phone on my way to the station. He said, hey, I heard, it's funny how rumors spread, so I just thought I'd throw it out there. He literally called me, hey, I heard you're going to sell all your rental properties. I'm like, who told you that? I only told one person. It was yesterday. And he's like, that's who told me. I go, okay, great. I said, maybe I will. He said, well, send them all to me before you advertise them. I may be interested. I'm like, listen, bud, if it doesn't work for me, it's not going to work for you. So I'm going to have to sell these as the houses, at least, as personal residences to make any sense whatsoever from a tax perspective and a cost perspective. So anyway, that is my only angst right now. And I feel like that I'm talking to the congregation right now, that a lot of you, I'm preaching to you because you're like, amen, hallelujah, yes, you're right. And everyone I've talked to are like, this is out of control. So I'm hoping we get some property tax reform soon, because I didn't even really pay attention to my home stuff because it just, my wife takes care of it. And I was talking to her about it last night, and she said, oh yeah, I mean, look at how much our property taxes have gone up, even on these lots behind us that we have, or on our house. I'm like, holy crap. So there's an issue, and that's where I guess I'm telling you, these stealth taxes. Yeah, we know income taxes are right in front of our face, but these other taxes that creep up on us, those are the ones that may be the solution to our big beautiful debt problem, is other taxes that we just kind of slowly, like the frog in the boiling pan, right, where he just doesn't even know he's being cooked until he's dead. That may be the taxes that get us out of this, but keep an eye on all of it, and definitely be mad when you should be mad and be calm when you're calm. But I think, you know, right now that may be one of these solutions out of this thing. All right, guys, I'm not quite done yet. I wanted to make sure that I covered everything I wanted to cover today. I think I'm in my last segment right now, aren't I? Alex, last segment? Second to last, okay. I lose track of time. So I had this really cool piece that I was given on estate tax rates, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time on that before I take the final break. So it was interesting because now, yeah, we have this multi-million-dollar, $30 million if you're married, $15 million if you're single, of eligible room to have a big, big estate. Then once you go over that number, the first 10,000 is taxed at 18%, the next 10,000 at 20, the next 20,000 at 22, but it's actually progressive all the way up to 40%. So if you have an estate, a really big estate, and you are over that amount, then you'll be taxed at 40%. So when I talk about estate planning, I want to remind you all that when I was starting in the 90s, it was $600,000. So $600,000, that included your house, your retirement accounts, even your death benefit on your life insurance, all of it. Then it went to $1 million, then it went to $2 million, then it went to $5 million, then it went away, then it went to ten, or then it went to $10 million, then it went away, then back to $5 million, right? And then it's been all over the place. Then it went to $10 million, and then went to $20 million, now it's at $30 million. So when you talk about federal estate tax, that again could be another area that we could raise a lot of revenue. But it's been so inconsistent over time. So it's interesting, when we were talking last year about how the IRS came back out and said, listen, if you do any major estate planning during this period of time, we will not claw it back. So when it was set to reset and go to half of what it currently is, there was a lot of people doing some pretty serious transferring of assets. We're talking businesses. Lots of businesses were moving into irrevocable trust, getting them out of their estate. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm 55. I think I'm probably going to wait it out, because you could always wait out to the next administration. And that's a good way to look at it. There's other things in here, taxable benefits on Social Security. So when I talk to Todd Young next week, I'm going to really get some insight on this, in a couple of weeks. I was told that they were going to deal with this stuff. They were going to do the bill, this big bill first. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of other stuff going on. The bill, the tariffs, get that all hammered out, then Social Security. So Social Security should be next on the list of things to try and make solvent and shore it up. So we'll see, but as I learn information or I learn things, trust me, I'll tell you, because I have nothing to hide. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, come back, and wrap her up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you didn't turn me off halfway through, like, oh my gosh, here he goes again, right? I promise I won't do this every single week to you. I don't know what's on the program for next week. I know I'm not going to be recording it early because of my, I think next week early, I can't remember. I think I leave on Tuesday or Wednesday of next week for Uruguay, and then I'll be back the following week. My wife will be 55 on the 12th of August, so happy birthday to my lovely bride of 31, soon to be 32 years, and happy 59th birthday to my brother Dan, who turned 59 today on July 31st. He's a Leo. We had a card circling around the office because Dan, of course, is our controller and chief compliance officer. And everyone signed it, you know, happy birthday, Dano, you know, whatever. And mine said, happy birthday, brother. You're only 6 months away from being able to take a penalty-free withdrawal from your IRA. He laughed about that. And the scary thing is, I told him, I remember when Dad turned 59 and a half. And I remember calling him and saying, Dad, I know you're 6 months past your birthday, but I wanted to wish you a happy 59 and a half birthday because you can now take penalty-free withdrawals from your IRA. And how time flies, because now Dad will be 78 next week. Dan's now 59, and time flies. Time flies. And you can't get that back. I was talking with a friend of mine today who's much older than me. We own a couple things together. And he was talking about time, and he said, you know, we're going back to the real estate thing. He's like, you're spending a little too much time on that. I said, mentally I am. I mean, I'm not physically sitting there, you know, doing anything, but mentally, yes, I am. And he said, you're wasting time doing that. He said, just dump it, get rid of it, be happy, because one thing you can't get back is time. And we can lose money and make money back. We can get sick and we can get better. But once time is gone, it is gone. And as the older you get, the more you appreciate that. Because when you're young and you know your 20s and 30s and maybe even 40s, you just don't think about it too much. But then when you start putting things in perspective, like I remember calling my dad on his 59th and a half birthday, and now he's going to be 78, and my brother's turned 59, and I'm 3.5 years behind him. I'm like, whoa, we need to kind of tap the brakes here just a little bit. And how do you do that? I don't really know. I don't think there is a way. Steve Martin once said on a Dave Letterman interview, age is like a roll of toilet paper. The older you get, the faster the roll goes. So the roll of toilet paper, right? The more you use, you get down that little final bit and it just rolls fast. And again, I have no idea why. I have things to consider. I think it's perspective. Right. When you say, hey, we're going to see like right now, I mean, believe it or not, you know, we're closer to Christmas than we weren't a month ago, you know. And now you're like, OK, well, we're already thinking about, OK, fall and in November. I've got a conference to go to. Oh, yeah. And then we're bumping up against this. Our Christmas party's already planned. I just think it's crazy that time is rolling by so stinking fast. And I know when you're a kid, it's like it doesn't do that. But when you get older, it definitely does. So, anyway, that's just a little philosophy for you as we wrap up the big show. I hope everyone has a wonderful week. And like I said, Bloomington Speedway on Friday night, Sheldon Kinzer Memorial. You've got the Taste of Bloomington on Saturday and lots of other things in between. So have a great weekend, everyone. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.